Another blood-red sunset and yet another moon face, and still another 100 miles to my next resting place. Driving down the road, eyes on the horizon, within my car I'm all alone, but feeling good and feeling strong, knowing that this path I'm on brings me to myself. I'm driving.
Hey now all, I'm Joey C. Welcome back to another episode of Spirit Sherpa. This is the show that helps and encourages you on your journey to unlock your magic mojo. With me, as always, is the Spirit Doctor, Kelly Sparta. Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Joey.
How's it going?
It's going well.
We are kind of doing something that feels a little bit like deja vu. I feel like we've talked about this before, but we are going to talk today about thinking symbolically.
Yes.
I'm not sure what that means entirely. So why don't you start us off by telling us, what is thinking symbolically mean?
Okay. So what you have to recognize is that magic exists at the level of the subconscious and unconscious for most people. And within the subconscious and unconscious, we operate on a symbolic level. We don't operate on a logic level. So our brains work in symbols. And so in order for us as humans in today's day and age to recognize what's going on as our subconscious and unconscious tries to talk to us, we have to begin to understand what the symbols are and what they mean.
Okay.
So the process of learning how to think symbolically is, it's kind of like brain bending, because you have to learn how to see the symbols in everything, and it will completely change all literature for you forever. Okay.
Wow. Why?
Well, because so much of literature is spoken in symbols. It'll also change movies for you forever. So, you know, there's so much of a rich tapestry of what's being said under the surface. And it's so very clear to me that some people get it and some people don't. And if you really want to grasp how badly people don't get it, watch Mamma Mia and then watch Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. And you will see that the fact of the matter is that the person who wrote the first one, who wrote the book and the first movie and the stage play, really got symbols. Yeah. I actually have 7 pages of notes on the symbology of Mamma Mia. Wow. That's how much I love Mamma Mia. The person who wrote Mamma Mia, Here I Go Again, which was a different writer, broke every symbol that was created by the original in the screenplay. I was so angry when I left that movie because he broke everything. And so, you know, there's a host of difference between trying to continue a storyline and trying to continue a mythological arc. The reason Mamma Mia was so popular was because it tapped into the morphic field of the two aspects of Aphrodite, Aphrodite Pandemos and Aphrodite Ouranos. And so the older and the younger of the two Aphrodites in their triple aspect form, which the triple goddess is a traditional construct based on the moon, with the crescent moon, the full moon, and the waning moon, right? Mm-hmm. And so the triple aspect of each of the two were the mother and her two friends and the daughter and her two friends, right? Mm-hmm. And so that was a massive archetype. And they even said it's Aphrodite at the end of the movie, right? Where the well explodes open, right?
Yep.
But the whole thing was a modern day Aphrodite tale. The reason it was so popular is because Aphrodite in her triple aspect, in her double, you know, her older and younger self, exists in the collective unconscious. And we have not had an Aphrodite tale in such a long time that it was just like, yes, right? And so, you know, this is one of those things that you have to understand as you're going into the concept of thinking symbolically, is that you have all of these rich symbols that exist within every piece of popular culture that has any weight at all, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, the hero's journey is a classic mythological reference
yep.
that is covered in both Harry Potter and in the Lord of the Rings trilogies. Yep. It's all a hero's journey, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the hero must do it on his own ultimately, but he has his friends to support him. And this is this classic hero's journey.
Yeah.
So what you have to do as you start thinking about magic is you have to start recognizing the symbols that exist within our cultural references. If you want to learn about symbols, best way to do that is to pick up a book on dream interpretation.
Oh, okay.
There's a ton of different symbols referenced in dream interpretation, or you can look it up on dream sites. That's up to you. You can also layer that in with information about totem animals.
Yep.
That can be covered as well. I just got this great book called The Shaman's Guide to Power Animals. This particular book is really quite lovely for the fact that it covers each animal in its own format. So oh, wow. you get a whole lot of information about each animal and what it means. And so that's based on what the animal does, right? And mm-hmm. and who the animal is in the world. So, you know, if you're talking about Grandmother Spider, which I talk about a lot, there's the web, right? Yep. So the web of life and, you know, catching things and understanding the vibrations of things and, you know, the territorialness of spiders and that sort of thing. So that strength of the spider's threads in comparison to the web itself, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at animals, it's about the animal. That's the animal's powers, right? And so when you start looking into the symbols that are in things, then you start to really begin to think symbolically. Joseph Campbell actually did a whole series called The Power of Myth on PBS years ago. It's on Amazon or, you know, somewhere. If you look for it, you'll find it.
Yeah.
It's a six-part series, and it's divine for talking about symbology. And then there's also, if you read Carl Jung,
yep.
He did a huge amount on the collective unconscious and on symbols and symbology as well. And so the act of thinking symbolically allows you to skip the logic within your magic.
It also sounds like it allows you to somewhat skip the language as well.
Absolutely. And the language can screw you up.
Yeah.
So, however, you have to know all of the different ways in which the symbols are used so yeah. that you don't accidentally invoke something you don't want.
Right.
Right. So, for instance, if you use black for a funeral, but you're in China.
Yeah.
That would be wrong.
Yeah. So there's cultural impact there. Right.
Exactly. That too. So, you know, this is the sort of thing that you want to look at when you're thinking symbolically. So you want to really just absorb as much as you can about the symbology of different things. And so looking up the magical implications of different trees, for instance, mm-hmm. you know, oak is protective and masculine. Birch is feminine, right? You know, the different types of things like that. A lot of the stuff we talked about in sympathetic magic
yep.
will actually play into this as well,
okay.
because they can have protective qualities or they can have influencing qualities. The purpose of learning how to think symbolically, though, is to begin to learn how to think in forms of ritual, okay?
Okay.
So if you're designing a ritual for yourself, let's say that you're going to do a, you know, you want to be more attractive. So then you have to start thinking about what is attraction.
Okay.
And how does that happen? And it's not just about being pretty or handsome. It's about being magnetic.
Yep.
And so if you want to be magnetic, well, maybe you use a magnet in your ritual.
Okay.
Right. If you want to attract your soulmate, maybe you put the soulmate you think of something that represents your soulmate, and you put that on one half of the magnet and you put your picture on the other half of the magnet, and you every day move them a little closer together. That's a symbolic aspect of the working that you're doing.
Okay.
that make sense?
Yeah, it seems to tie a lot to intention and the you know, leaning on that sympathetic magic aspect to really leverage the symbology. Okay, yep, very much.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very simple concept, but you know, rituals don't have to be complex to be worthwhile.
Yep.
And in fact, the simpler they are, the probably the more powerful they are. Because, you know, if you make it too complicated, then the energy gets all bound up in the complication.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've mentioned this before, but, you know, the beginner witch says, I'll use six different kinds of essential oils and, you know, six candles and, you know, I'll face west and I'll do this and I'll do that. And the intermediate witch says, oh, you know, I've got a mushroom and a string and a needle in my pocket. Make it work. You know, I'll do a spell that says, you know, this is bad, go away, right?
Yep.
And then the advanced witch says, fuck off! Right? It's a very simple concept. The simpler, the more obvious the intent, the less you rely on other things, the easier it gets. But you have to be really clear in your intent and really focused in your abilities, which is why the beginner witch uses all the things.
Right.
Exactly. And they're like, oh, I need help. I don't know. I don't trust myself. It's like, okay. You know, you get to the point where you trust yourself and then you don't use the things as much. But however, even when you get to an advanced level where it's simply fuck off, right? There is still a place where you're working on a super symbolic level. And that fuck off comes with a massive blast of energy that shoves out into the ethers at whatever it is that you're trying to banish, right?
Yep.
So, you know, even when you've gotten to the advanced levels and you're not using all the sympathetic magic stuff as much, not to say we don't use it at all, because I do.
Right.
But even when you're not using it as much, you're still using the symbology of what you're doing. And you're still designing symbolically.
Okay.
And there is power to creating an experience for yourself. There is a tremendous amount of power in sort of ritual theater.
Okay.
Because our subconscious minds don't know the difference between pretend and reality.
Okay.
And so when you walk through a ritual space, even if it is just ritual drama in your mind, quote unquote, right?
Yep.
If you take it at all seriously and you walk through it with intention, then it has an impact.
Right.
You know, a labyrinth on the ground is simply a circle with a bunch of spirals in it that, you know, you just follow. It's not anything relevant until you intend for it to be relevant. And when you study mythology, you also get additional symbology from that.
Right.
So, you know, when you walk the labyrinth, you should probably know the story of the Minotaur and how the Minotaur lives at the center of the maze, right? That sort of thing. So, and we're going to be doing a whole series on mythology with Kathy coming up.
Yeah.
You know, we'll talk more about that as we go, but for the moment, thinking symbolically is super helpful. And it's helpful, not just in magic, but in all sorts of things. If you want to be a writer or a designer, or even if you just play role-playing games, it would be super helpful.
Exactly.
I actually wrote an entire campaign using symbology, like really heavily.
So it sounds like a lot of the symbology that we've talked about to this point comes from things like mythology and some of those myths and stories that we've heard. Are there, I don't know how to describe it, but sort of more recent symbologies that can present themselves as we sort of advance and move along? Or are symbologies really based on what is told and passed down through the ages? Is it like pop culture symbology?
If it's in existence long enough, so some of the Lord of the Rings stuff can be symbolic.
Yep.
It's been around long enough. It's been engaged with for long enough with enough people who are really actively engaged with it, like living, eating, breathing it, you know, that it has become its own mythology.
Okay.
Unto itself. Harry Potter, not as much.
Okay.
And part of that is because Harry Potter references different mythological things by like teachers' names and stuff, like Professor Lupin, go yeah. figure, werewolf, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't embroil itself in the mythos.
Right.
It has its own world, but it doesn't have its own mythology per se.
It's borrowing from the mythology and the symbology that has come before to create.
Yeah,
its...
and not even heavily. You know, it's the hero's journey, and yeah. there's a nemesis, and that's sort of a basic storyline arc thing. Mm-hmm. And there's a mentor, you know,
yeah.
again, a storyline arc. It's you know, you can look at it and compare it to Lord of the Rings with Bilbo and Gandalf
yeah.
as being Harry and Dumbledore. And, you know, Sauron as you know, the he who shall not be named Voldemort. you can really map them in that way.
Yeah.
But unlike Tolkien, who created a whole language and a whole, I think it's a function of the depth to which Tolkien went with his work.
Yeah.
In creating he created a mythology for his culture.
Right. It wasn't just the story. He built the world around it.
Exactly. And, you know, she built a world, but she didn't build the foundation of the world in the way that Tolkien did.
Right.
And to be fair, I mean, that's a freak ton of work.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm not saying she should have, because I absolutely adore the books. They're yes. a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But they are fun. They're not like deep level sort of stuff, which Tolkien can be taken in that level, because he engages things at such a deep level. There were people who were really pissed off that Tom Bombadil didn't make it into the movies.
Yeah.
And it's because Tom Bombadil didn't do hardly anything for the plot.
Right.
But he was there. Why was Tom Bombadil there? Well, because Tom Bombadil is the Green Man.
Yeah.
Okay. And he just is part of the mythology of the books, right? Yep. There is a mythology to the books that is inherent within everything that Tolkien did with them. And that is why they've been such a long-standing, long-lasting process for yep. them. There are different scenes in which the movie addresses some core level mythos. So for instance, when Galadriel takes the One Ring, mm-hmm. and she goes big and dark and wild, and she says, "I am all powerful. All will love and fear me," which most people do not remember from the movie.
Right.
Then it's because it's invoking the dark feminine aspect of the divine goddess, and so, you know, that is its whole thing. And her initiation, you know, she when she hands the One Ring back, she says, "I have passed the test. I will fade and go to the West," also known as, "I have completed my task. I have accepted my initiation, and now I'm going to die."
Right.
That's what fade and go to the West means. And that's using mythology from, you know, he also tapped into mythology that exists in our culture.
Right.
Right. So he tapped into the Fae and the elves and the, you know, hobbits were, I don't think existed before him, but, you know, the dark elves and the, you know, all of that, he tapped into that, and wizards and trolls and orcs and, you know, all that stuff. That stuff all existed before Tolkien, but he built it into his mythological reference, and therefore it helped to form the foundation of his world.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you look at Tolkien, the One Ring could be a powerful symbol that you could use.
Yeah.
That is a symbol. I wouldn't. Because right. holy shit, that would be a shitty symbol to use for ritual.
Right.
That would be bad. But you know, the One Ring is obviously built into the collective unconscious now, right? And you know, even Star Trek, certain things in Star Trek you could probably pull off because it's been around for 40 years, because it's been so in a hand. Everybody's been like into the whole Star Trek thing. You know, there isn't a single theme that's gone throughout Star Trek, but if you use the Star Trek insignia, for instance,
yep,
to like represent something that means, you know, altruism and truth and whatever, mm-hmm, you could probably use that pretty effectively in a ritual, especially if people have a Star Trek reference, but even if they don't, honestly.
So for these symbols, then, it's really about their ability to start to create and generate their own morphic field, mm-hmm, that people ultimately tap into, leveraging the symbols as the entryway into this sort of energy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. So if you want to know what the foundational myths are for any culture, go read, not any culture, but for Western culture,
yeah,
go read Grimm's Fairy Tales.
Yeah.
Grimm's Fairy Tales are the core mythology for, yeah, most children. They have been sanitized by Disney, so don't read Disney.
Right.
Grimm's Fairy Tales are, in fact, quite grim. They are well named, even though that wasn't what they were meant to be. But yeah, they are core mythological references. So there's the old woman in the woods, the witch,
yeah,
who is to be feared, right? Yeah. And it's interesting because there have been a few things recently that are really trying to sort of undo that particular mythos. Mm-hmm. If you look at Maleficent,
yeah,
and at Wicked,
yeah,
they are undoing that wicked witch.
Yeah, they're backing off. They're giving justification to the behavior.
Right. In a way. They're normalizing the dark feminine.
Yes.
Is what they're doing. Mythos of the fairy princess was broken by Princess Diana.
Yeah.
Her lifetime was to break the fairy princess, mm-hmm, archetype.
Yeah.
She broke it. Well and truly broke it. She was, you know, I grew up watching her get married in the early 80s. Yep. 1984, she got married. And, you know, she was the quintessential fairy princess. Mm-hmm. And then it all went to shit.
Right.
And by the late 90s, it was broken and she was gone. And she went from the princess, which title she was stripped from, to renaming herself the Queen of Hearts. Mm-hmm. And so, which is kind of an interesting dynamic when you look at the Queen of Hearts in Alice in Wonderland.
Right. Exactly.
Right? So, you know, it's like, she started that whole, you know, dark queen thing being undone,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So powerful, powerful human for her station that she used to break that. Excellent. And that has been the, you know, as women start to step into their empowerment, the breaking of the fairy princess was required.
Yeah.
Because within the fairy princess, there is a lot of disempowerment. It's, oh, save me, my prince. My prince has come to save me. Life is great and good. All is wonderful if he's right next to me. Right?
Yeah.
But if I'm by myself, I'm in danger. Right?
Right? Exactly.
It's just like, fuck that noise. I am great and powerful Oz. No. No, it's just, you know, it's just, you got to be powerful on your own.
Yep.
You have to be complete on your own.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, this has been really good. And I think very, very, very insightful. I didn't know what you were talking about at the beginning, and now I do. Mission accomplished.
And as you can tell, I just sort of scraped the surface.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there.
Oh, there's so much stuff. It's so, such a rich environment. Such a rich.
Where can world. We go to get more information? I know you mentioned, you know, the book and the series, the PBS series, but is there other stuff like that?
Dream interpretation websites, yeah, and, you know, anything that explores mythology and mythos or symbology itself.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's, if you take classes on how to do movie making, there's a huge amount of symbology in movie making. In, yeah, fact, anytime you see the color red in a movie, mm-hmm, somebody's going to die.
Okay.
Or somebody's already dead.
All right. So there was a lot for us to take in here, folks. But if you have any questions about what you've heard today, or if you have any other questions or ideas for episodes or anything like that, you can send them to Kelly, and you can email her at Kelly, K-E-L-L-E, at kellysparta.com. And speaking of kellysparta.com, you can also go there and subscribe to her mailing list. That's a great way to get more information about what's going on. Just Kelly's thoughts. she sends out and things like that. Lots of, you know, you've said before that you know, we try to keep the podcast evergreen, but that's where a place where you might talk about what's going on in the moment or energetically or otherwise.
Yeah. If there's a disturbance in the force, I send it out on my newsletter. Okay. So if you want to hear about those sorts of things, they come out on the newsletter. So definitely sign up for that.
Yep. And speaking of subscribing for the mailing list, we also want you to subscribe to the podcast and rate it wherever you're listening to your podcast. That helps to give more visibility to what's going on here. And of course, speaking of visibility, we're just tying things together. It's like a long chain of stuff here. share to let your friends and your family know about Spirit Sherpa, that you like what Kelly's doing, and that it might help them as well.
Yeah. And if you see a thread in a Facebook group online or somewhere that relates to something that you've heard about in the podcast, please share that episode of that podcast into that group. I'm not allowed to do that in most of those groups. And so I get banned for doing it if I did that. Right. So, but you guys can do it all day long. And so I would really appreciate it. That would be a great way for you to show me your appreciation, because, you know, only by the numbers at which it grows do we know that people are actually enjoying and listening, and when you guys write in and tell us. So the more you can share and the more you can expand people's knowledge with this information, the better off everybody is. And I so appreciate the help.
Awesome. All right. Is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up here for the day?
I love you.
Oh, there you go. Kelly loves you, and that is all that we have for this week. Be sure to join us next time, folks, as Kelly adds another chapter into your beginner's guide to energy, magic, and the spirit world. I'm Joey C. here with Kelly Sparta, and you have been listening to Spirit Sherpa. So long, everyone.
Bye.
Each mile I travel over 13,000 now, I leave behind a little fear.
Spirit Sherpa is the sole property of Kelly Sparta Enterprises and is distributed under Creative Commons BY-NC-ND 4.0 license. For more information about this licensing, please go to creativecommons.org. Any requests for deviations to this licensing should be sent to kelle@kellesparta.com. That's kelly@kellesparta.com. To sign up or to get more information on the programs, offerings, and services referenced in this episode, please go to kellesparta.com. This episode of Spirit Sherpa has been produced by Honu Voice Productions.
Home and my love and my life and me.
Are you waking up to the spiritual world and realizing that you have no idea what you're doing, but you feel like you kind of probably should, especially since you seem to be seeing things and feeling things and having things see you that maybe aren't so great, and that you might want to actually control your experience of that? Well, I have great news for you, because our Welcome to the Woo program does just that for you. It teaches you how to hold your energy field, manage your energy field, clear your energy field, protect your energy field, and learn how to protect your space. And you learn how to do basic divination and talk to your guides, so that you feel like you actually have a clue and have a way to talk to the guides that will help you to figure everything else out. And it teaches you how to make sure that you feel mentally, emotionally, and energetically safe. That means that we also deal with things like fear and anxiety and worry and dread and self-doubt and inner and outer judgments. And we help you build a foundation of self-support and courage. All of these things together create a solid sense of safety in your own life. They will reduce your stress levels in half, guaranteed. So visit the website at kellesparta.com and find out more about the Welcome to the Woo program. Your future awaits.